a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
The Astros finally got rid of Jose Abreu on Friday. Huzzah! It was a Friday news dump. Don't get it twisted. That was a Friday news dump. They could have done that on Thursday. They could have done that at any point, honestly, over the last couple of weeks. Hell, they could have done it instead of sending Jose Abreu to West Palm Beach. But they did finally do it. And I suppose, Joe George, that they deserve a little bit of credit on that front.
Yeah, they do. I saw a lot of pushback to that, to the video we posted from Joel and Jeremy outside East River 9 talking about that, because Jeremy, I think it was, said something very similar. And a lot of people are like, give him credit. They should have done it months ago. I mean, look. It's a three-year deal worth $58 million. They cut him less than a year and a half into the deal. They should have released him. I don't know how many owners would actually do that. Like, we gave Jim Crane grief for this.
But for not being there at this press conference, yeah, for a move that he signed off on, as did Jeff Bagwell.
But, like, I do wonder how many teams would actually make this decision and not just, you know, stash the player somewhere or just keep playing them. It depends on the ownership group and how much money you have. But, like, for example, like the White Sox, if they would have signed Jose Abreu to this deal instead of the Astros, they never would have done this. Like, they don't have the money for it. A team like the Colorado Rockies, like, they would never do something like this, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So
this team's willing to buy out contracts on bad players.
I give them credit for that.
Yeah, like
seven-time ALCS in a row representatives, and on top of that, they will buy out a bad contract.
When we talked about it, we never thought that they would actually do it, or at least do it in June. We always thought, like, yeah, maybe it was, you know, late July, and later in the season, once it's less money, they're going to still try to salvage it. I had no idea that they're going to do it on whatever, June 15th. Like, that was surprising.
Dana Brown took some shots. Can't hide from that. Jim Crane is hiding, of course, but you can't hide from that. I led this thing myself, said Dana Brown when asked about releasing Jose Abreu. Ultimately, as a GM, I talked to my owner in terms of giving him my thought process, and I talked to Jim, but I led the process, continuing, I'm not the type of guy that's going to be in the habit of signing a lot of older guys. Continued, I don't think there's a teaching moment here. Some of these deals work out. This one clearly did not. Brown took shots at Jim Crane here, and I like it. I understand that a lot of people are going to read them or hear what Brown had to say, and they know that Dana Brown is delicately tight-roping the line of criticizing his boss and also giving himself credit for making this move. But he definitely, in his own way, took some shots at Jim Crane there, and I like it.
What do you think about the part where there's no learning? You know, we're not going to learn anything from this. What do you think about that?
There is a teaching moment. The teaching moment is don't not have a general manager.
Yeah, like I'm like,
that's the teaching moment.
I think there are plenty of teaching moments. How to read analytics correctly. You can learn from that. You can learn from not signing players at this age that much money, by drafting better, by not trading all your prospects away. But I think there's plenty of teaching moments from this. I hope there's teaching moments from this.
My number one lesson is that you should always have a general manager. Clearly, it does not work out.
Mm-hmm.
We learned it with the Texans, Bill O'Brien being general manager and head coach. We just heard from him last week talking about his regrets taking on that role. And with Jim Crane, we get it. You're signing the checks. This team has been very good since you took the team over and got through those 4 years of tanking. But there's a certain point where you got to admit, you don't know what you don't know, and Jeff Bagwell also should have been willing to admit that. So here we are, and I think that today is the final day we're going to talk about Jose Abreu. I think we can, just like Voldemort in the Harry Potter series, We can move on from ever having to mention Jose Abreu again outside of the next time an athlete signs a bad contract in Houston sports, and we, of course, have to go back to talking about all the other bad contracts ranging from Kelvin Cato to Brock Osweiler and, of course, to Jose Abreu. But this is it.
Yeah, okay.
I think people are tired of talking about Jose Abreu, and we're all relieved that he's gone. The fact that they did this on a Friday, I feel like, was their attempt to get us to never talk about him again. Nope, there's one more day. After today, freedom. Free at last.
I think there has to be one more day.
Why one more day?
Because when Dana Brown does his flagship interview and Joe Espada, they'll both be asked about it. And I'm curious, like, if their answers will differ since they're going to be in a more one-on-one conversation about Jose Abreu. Like, even though it'll be potentially a week old.
Oh, no. No, no.
Like, I'm curious to hear what they have to say. So there's a slight potential that we have to hear what Dana Brown says and react to that. But for the most part, I'm totally with you.
I guess to what you're saying, I am curious to see what the Astros PR team cooks up, because there will probably be one saying, much yes. like Deshaun Watson repeating the same three things as an introductory press conference with the Cleveland Browns, or both Jeff Bagwell and Dana Brown talking about the back of baseball cards, Joe Espada as well. I feel like there will be some group meeting about how to best touch on Jose Abreu.
Yeah.
And then probably, I imagine that answer is going to feature some sort of, we're just moving forward. It's time to move forward.
I think moving forward and learning, like learning moment, or, you know,
teaching moment,
we'll learn a lesson. There's lessons to be learned. I think those are the two leaders in the clubhouse for what is for sure going to be on the bingo card for Dana Brown.
Oh, maybe we should just do that ahead of time. We should make a cliche bingo card for Dana Brown and Joe Espada before they do their weekly interviews.
He's a great guy. He was a great teammate.
I could honestly just say, like, hey guys, like, he's not on the team anymore. Like, we're not talking about Jose Abreu. We talked about it last week.
Yeah,
we're just trying to move on.
We don't talk about guys who aren't on the roster.
Yeah, like I could just see, like, they're just being like, whoop, like, we're over this. Yeah. But for the most part, like, I do agree with you. Like, I think after today, you know, it's because it's like you're on your remote. It's happening on the fly. Not like you have the time to process it. Today's the last day for Jose Abreu until the Texans, Rockets, or Astros sign a player to a big contract. And we ask the question, is this the next Jose Abreu?
Like, and let me tell you, it'll be hard to beat. I think he's right up there with Brock Osweiler as far as just, like, untouchably bad. Because it's the amount of money.
I hope it is.
It's the amount of money and just how bad he was. I don't think people have talked enough about how bad Jose Abreu has been.
He was on pace to be the worst baseball player in history, position player, this year.
Which proves how hard that record is to break, because it's hard to stay on the team long enough to break that record.
So, like, this is for the most part, this is the end of Jose Abreu, because he's gone. The players have talked about it, the GM, the manager have all talked about it. And it's more about what's next. The only other time besides when bad contracts come up, we talked about this a little bit on Friday. I wonder what the long-term repercussions are for Jim Crane's mindset as he's willing to sign paychecks. Of if a player is a certain age, like I know Dana Brown, obviously you said, like as we read his quote, talks about signing older players as well. Not every time it's going to be a bad deal like this. And my only concern would be that this is, in the future, when they hit free agency, it's going to prevent long-term signings even more. Like, is there any chance that this move has long-term effect on what you view Kyle Tucker? Because he would be 33, 34, 35 if you signed him to an 8-year, 9-year deal, like Jose Abreu was when you signed him to his deal. So, like, the back end of that contract will be the Jose Abreu years.
But the problem is, you signed Jose Abreu at age 35 to those deals.
I think the closer comp would be a Justin Verlander deal. Would be just, like, do you learn your lesson? Justin Verlander is the one where you're like,
Which is kind of funny, because didn't the Justin Verlander deal, they kind of did learn that? Like, they let him go to the Mets.
They didn't sign him.
And they didn't sign him, but they signed Jose Abreu to a massive deal.
And then they traded Ryan Clifford, who's apparently doing very well in the minor leagues,
for
Justin Verlander. The Astros did tweet out a picture of Jose Abreu saying, thank you for everything, Jose. We wish you the best of luck! ! And then there's a big graphic. Thank you, Jose
Abreu. I have a question.
That was funny.
Are we sure we need the social media team for a thank you Until I see you again, the two cars going on the two different roads with Charlie Plouffe playing. Like, do we need that for Jose Abreu?
We don't need that. The funny thing is, they still did it anyway. And if you read the replies, most of the replies have been marked as probable spam. But you click the view probable spam, and it's just everybody clowning on the Astros.
Do you? Okay. If Jose Abreu somehow gets a job somewhere else.
Playing baseball. Okay.
Does he get a tribute video when he comes back to Houston? If he signs with the Marlins.
I want him to.
How many home runs did he hit in the ALDS against the Twins? Is that enough to make a tribute video?
I mean, he'll have the home run for when he's like his first home run as an Astro that took forever to hit.
The one that he hit in June.
Where like his like shirt was like falling off as he's sprinting around like the bases.
If you show all the highlights in slow motion, you'll have enough time. The real question is how slow motion do you go? I mean, look, that part that Joe mentioned. The Astros losing their mind when he hit that home run.
Yeah.
That's going to be probably 50% of the video.
Yeah, yeah.
If they were to give him a tribute video.
But yeah, I just, that'll be like hopefully the next time we talk about Jose.
I now do want him to get a job again, play for another MLB team.
For just, the tribute video?
Just for the. Where we can just, oh man, all those moments with Jose Abreu.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And you're really bad. Batting average and wins above replacement. It was historic. Do you remember the numbers? Holy crap, this actually happened at the major league level. 697 plate appearances in 19 months with a -2 wins above replacement. No player with at least 600 plate appearances since the start of last season had a lower mark.
Oh, man.
By the way, John Singleton, not much better. But Singleton's at least better than five first.
I just want to say thank you to Jose Abreu for that moment. without Jose Abreu, we don't have what just happened on this show. So thank you.
Is Jose Singleton the guy who's most bummed out about Jose Abreu leaving our lives?
Yeah, because we're all going to start going after him.
Yeah, now. Because it went from play Singleton. He's so much better than Abreu to now where you look at his numbers and then think about what an average first baseman does. You're like, oh, actually, he's not good either.
Yeah, we talked about this because I know you weren't with us on Friday. Like, who is the kind of the next fall guy? And that was the first thing that I said was Singleton because people are going to be wanting Dubon. Loprofito, who has, by the way, not played in a baseball game since Friday. He looks like he hurt his hand sliding to, I think it was third base or second base.
Great.
So he's
ready to be on the Astros.
He's not playing, so maybe he's hurt, maybe he's not. Who really knows?
Yeah. We got that dude Hummel.
Hummel's here. Cabbage has played some first base, who for some reason I sneaky kind of like. I can't explain it, but I just like sneaky like Trey Cabbage.
Sneaky like Trey Cabbage.
But yeah, right. John Singleton, like he is going to be enemy number one for Astros fans now.
Singleton, who went over 3 on Sunday, has a batting average of .217. His .646 OPS is the fifth lowest among major league first basemen with 170 plate appearances. He has a .569 OPS during his last 95 at-bats, and the Astros viewed Singleton as a worse defender than Jose Abreu. He's got a worth -4 defensive runs saved. Only two qualified first basemen are worse. One of them, Spencer Torkelson, is no longer on Detroit's major league roster. So there you go, guys. I mean, that's the next one up. I think Joe is right on that front. It is Gallon and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is it. This is the last Jose Abreu talk that you will ever hear from noon to 3.
Goodbye, sweet friend.
This is it, okay? Unless you texted something in. Up next, we do have to talk
about... Wait, I have one more idea.
You do?
For Jose Abreu.
No. This is it, Joe. This is it. Say it right now.
Okay. Very quickly. Over the last 3 years, what has been like your content power rankings? Who gave us the most content?
Okay.
Dusty Baker, Jose Abreu, David Culley / Lovie Smith, COVID. Where does Jose Abreu, anyone else we're missing? Like, what gave us the most content?
Since 2020.
Dusty was better content than
Jose
Abreu.
COVID has the numbers. I mean, what are we talking
about?
Yeah,
maybe we have to leave COVID out of it.
It's been a while.
COVID, yeah. one hit wonder.
Yeah, it's been a while, though.
But what a year it was.
It was a long year.
Actually, it was like 2 years.
Right, you are there. So there you go. I suppose if you have any last Dusty thoughts.
Dusty number one. Because that was every day.
It was every day. We'll squeeze it into the next segment. If you have a final thought, you got to get it in now. And we will talk about the biggest positive for the Astros this weekend. Something that it's exciting me. First, you know what else excites me? The Highway Cantina, where you could get a 975 tall Tex and margarita. It's been a long week without you, my friend. But when I go back to the Highway Cantina, I'll see you again. That margarita, the Large Marge, which is essentially a Scorpion Bowl edition of the margaritas. The Highway Cantina is awesome. It's right smack in the middle of East Downtown, by the baseball stadium, by the basketball arena, by the soccer stadium, too. So if you're looking for a place to make a pit stop before you go in there, or maybe you're just downtown and you want some good drinks and good food, the Highway Cantina is your one-stop destination. They got award-winning chefs in the back that are going to cook all sorts of things that you don't traditionally expect at a Tex-Mex place, like wood-fired oysters, mesquite sausage, but also they got the old reliables, whether it's chips and salsa. I love their salsa verde. I think it's the best in the city. Or their fajitas, the chicken fajitas. Again, best in the city. This place is so flipping good. So check out the Highway Cantina on St. Emmanuel in East Downtown and tell them Paul Gallant sent you by.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
That's it, guys. Jose Abreu is now Lord Voldemort. We cannot say his name ever again. For those who don't know, in the Harry Potter book series, Voldemort, the bad guy, everyone's scared to say his
name.
The
ugly-looking dude in the movies.
He doesn't have a nose.
He does not have a nose.
I didn't read the books. Do we ever get a story on why he doesn't have a nose?
Part of it is because
I actually don't know.
Supposedly, it's because of how many times he broke up his soul.
Yeah.
So that no one could ever kill him officially. His soul was broken up into these things, Sean, called Horcruxes.
But only his nose got lost?
I guess that's what happened.
He has all of his fingers.
No, but like he lost his hair. He went from like a normal white person to a
not a normal white person?
A piece of paper white.
Okay.
He looks like a snake.
You can see there's different colors here.
Yeah. He looks like a snake man. As one does when you lose your nose. You look like a snake man, especially when you also don't have any hair either. Someone texted in, when you start singing, I switch stations. Well, you just don't appreciate art.
You must switch a lot.
It's okay. It's okay. All right, there actually has been a positive to talk about over the weekend. I'm having a hard time focusing on that positive since the Astros are now 9 games back in the AL West. But Ronel Blanco had a no-hitter going into the 7th inning going into the 8th inning in yesterday's Astros victory. They pulled him from the game, though, after the 7th inning where he wrapped up. He also, going deep into the 5th inning, had a perfect game going. I'm very happy for Blanco. His all-star caliber first half of the year is the Astros' best first half story. I don't think it's a debate. That he has done this for you has been crucial, too, because you got to wonder where they would be without Ronel Blanco. He has been their most reliable starting pitching on a team that features a lot of big names.
Early on, you could have made an argument for Peña. I think, with Peña and Blanco. But Peña's kind of dropped off a little bit. He wasn't as great as he was early on in the season. Blanco's absolutely the best story right now. And we got the first round of All-Star voting today. They didn't include the pitchers in this. As of right now, the Astros have 3 All-Stars. Yordan Alvarez is the DH, Jose Altuve at second, and Kyle Tucker is the third outfielder at this moment, joining Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. But Ronel Blanco should absolutely be an All-Star this season. It's probably one of the better stories in all of baseball. I mean,
yeah.
As they're talking about it yesterday, like just kind of like, you know, giving us the reminder on Father's Day of like what Blanco's journey was like. Is his child is born. He's pitching against the Space Cowboys at Minute Maid Park. He finds out he makes the roster. His next start, he throws the no-hitter. And he's been pretty damn good throughout the season. Like, after the sticky stuff, it was a little bumpy. It wasn't as good as it's been. But see him bounce back yesterday. If he didn't walk those three guys in the fifth inning, he probably gets the no-hitter. Like, I feel pretty confident about that, actually.
Or maybe gets to pitch the eighth inning.
Yeah, exactly. He at least gets the eighth.
I think the big problem right now is that while it's non-competitive to pull a guy from a no-hitter, I think it's reprehensible, honestly.
Oh, really?
Let the guy pitch. Well, we already have minimized the regular season in all sports. You may as well just tell me that none of these games really matter in the grand scheme of things if you're pulling a guy from a no-hitter. We've seen this with the Astros with Justin Verlander. I think it was against the Orioles a couple of years ago. Or like you saw with Blanco yesterday, when he had an opportunity to do it for the second time during the first half of the year. But I get it, because they have so little depth right now, you do need to make sure that at the very least Ronel Blanco, who has never pitched at this kind of volume before as a starter, is going to be available for you all year long.
Yeah, I think it's like his 107 pitches is the most he had thrown this season. He was at 94 through 7. So I'm like 50-50 with you here, Paul. Like, I agree with you. I think like taking a pitcher out when they have, you know, if he's going to the ninth inning, to me with 94 pitches, he's absolutely going out there. But because it was through 7, I get why they did it. He's going to pass his amount of pitches and innings thrown this season by a long shot, especially if they have any hope of making the playoffs and they go on and they somehow make a run at it. He's going to go past all that. At the same time, I kind of wish they would have let him try. Because after he threw all those pitches in the fifth, his next inning was 8 pitches. So, I think you could have run him out there with an Abreu or Presley kind of waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
In the eighth inning, just like as soon as, okay, it takes 10 pitches to get through one out, through one batter, and he's at 104, one out into the eighth inning, then you yank him. I kind of wish they would have given him a shot at it.
He said he didn't have an issue with it afterwards. I bet deep down he probably does. I mean, how often do you get a chance to do this? How many more chances is he going to have for this? I mean, there's still a part of me that, much like with JP France last year, I am wondering when eventually things come back to earth, because Blanco's all of a sudden doing this in his late 20s out of nowhere. But the stuff has been good this year. Supposedly it's that changeup. No one's come up with a way to combat it, at least to this point. We thought it might be would come after he was found to have had some of the, quote, stickiest stuff ever found on his non-throwing hand. Whatever the case, it's been a great story. I hope it continues. It really has to continue. He is, right now, their most consistent starting pitcher. Verlander, who knows how long he's going to be gone. The update with him, he told us yesterday, on Saturday, after getting scratched from his start, that he's been dealing with a neck issue for a couple of weeks. So Arrighetti comes in there and he gets absolutely shelled.
Yeah, it was not good. I mean, Blanco's been your stopper. Like, when things are going, like, you give up 19 hits on Saturday.
Oof.
You get smoked. And then Sunday, as you try to salvage the season, you for sure have to win Sunday's game to win 2 out of 3 against the Tigers. And he throws 7 no-hit innings. Like you can't ask for much more. Like, in big moments, he's been there for you throughout the year. If he doesn't continue at this pace, you're really going to need other guys to step up, because, you know, it's not the best story of the season. I think Monday shows are always weird because it's like, how far do you go back over the weekend? I feel like we've ignored Hunter Brown a little bit with how good he was again on Friday. Like he, to me, has been, his resurgence has been such a plus for this team as well.
Yeah, you need that too.
Like, you need that too. Like, you need two guys, and you really, like, Arrighetti can't be a pumpkin all of a sudden. You know, he can't go back to, like, the shoe is off the Cinderella slipper and be this guy again. That was a disaster for you. That was the worst thing that could have happened to you, honestly, this weekend. Because you needed, I think you're right, you needed a sweep. They didn't get it.
Nine games back in the AL West. What?
Maybe the next series they'll sweep.
They better. They should win the next 6 games. You want me to care or pay attention again or not be pouty whenever I talk about them? I mean, that's what you got to do. Do you care about that? Probably not, but you should.
Yeah, Paul, I have bad news.
I don't care about what I say?
No, well, that, and even if they did, I don't think they're sweeping the Orioles.
Well.
They didn't sweep the last three series where you laid down the gauntlet.
I'm just going to keep laying the gauntlet
down. Just keep
down.
Laying it down. One day it's going to hit.
Eventually.
It's like playing roulette. Just keep betting on black. It'll hit eventually. Well, yeah, you might lose a bunch of money as you wait for it to hit. But
you
like
kicked out of the casino and have your legs broken.
Yeah.
Because you're taking out money from loan sharks to keep on betting. Joe George, I'm Paul Gallant, Sean Mace behind the glass, Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Over the weekend in the NFL, we found out that the greatest coach in NFL history has a lot more game than we probably realized. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
80 days away from the start of the NFL season number 80. It's Jerry Rice. There are other people whose name you can mention, but you must say Jerry Rice's name first.
Of course. He's the best. The GOAT.
You think he's the GOAT receiver?
Yeah, I still do.
I think Randy Moss was better, but I understand why everyone picks Jerry Rice.
It's close. I don't think I go with Rice, and I kind of de facto go championships here a little bit, even though I know it's not Moss's fault that he has none, but it just helps the Rice case. They're easily the top two. Moss seemed more athletic, I would
Moss
say.
Moss was more athletic. I mean, look, Rice, there's no denying that in the open field, once he caught a pass, he was incredible, but Randy Moss, until Tyreek Hill, was perhaps the fastest player in the NFL. And it was just such an effortless glide past people. But, I mean, I think I pick Moss over Rice because of the sheer terror factor. I mean, Randy just puts his hand up, and if he's actually trying every single play, that's what's scary. But that's the difference, because Jerry Rice gave you his all on every single play and obviously was, again, really good.
And every play with Moss on the field, it was like, there's a chance there's a touchdown right now. Like, there's
Rice
a chance he scores a touchdown.
Rice could take a slant to the house. He scored a ton of touchdowns, which is the other thing that really jumps off the screen with him. You're thinking to yourself when you see the number of touchdowns he has. Wait, how? As a wide receiver? But personally,
I understand.
Moss was scarier to me.
I kind of just give him credit, too, for ages 39 and 40.
Yeah.
Having over 1,000-yard seasons with the Oakland Raiders. I mean, now, he didn't have more than 10 touchdowns in a season post-1996 and after. But still, to be dropping 1,000-plus yards at 39 and 40, man, that's good for him.
I forget how old he was when he was playing for the
Seahawks.
Seahawks.
He was 42.
Wasn't bad. He was still a good player out there.
Yeah, he had 25 catches and 362 yards for the Seahawks. Like,
is that
not
like in 2005 or something?
2004.
Yeah,
crazy. Like, he played that long.
Also crazy. Bill Belichick, who is 72 years old, is dating a 24-year-old former cheerleader.
Good for you, Bill.
Bill Belichick is the new love interest in his life. TMZ Sports has learned he's dating 24-year-old former competitive cheerleader Jordan Hudson. Sources close to the situation tell us the two have been romantic for a while now, becoming an item shortly after the ex-New England Patriots head coach called off his longtime relationship with Linda Holiday. According to one of Hudson's former cheerleading teammates, Hudson first met him on a flight from the Boston area bound for Florida back in 2021. They bonded over a philosophy project the student athlete had been working on. What?
Oh boy.
We're told they swapped contact information after landing and stayed friendly through the ensuing months, discussing her schoolwork and the X's and O's of her cheerleading routine. What?
Oh man.
I thought this was the normal amount of weird whenever you see a 70-year-old dating a 24-year-old.
Nearly 50-year age gap.
Yes, but then when you go into the details, it just makes it even weird.
She went to the roast of Tom Brady with Bill Belichick. There's a picture that I guess she posted on her Instagram story, It's the back of Belichick before he goes on stage. You are the embodiment of virtue, dedication, humility, and grace. I am deeply moved by you. Heart emoji.
Oh.
She does not remember the first three championships.
How could she?
No, that's just a fact. But Bill Belichick is dating a woman who does not remember the first three championships he won.
Yeah, I mean, she was probably
a Patriots head coach. She definitely doesn't remember the Giants.
I mean, they might have been months old.
She was alive for them.
Months old when they won this first title.
She was alive for them. And that is important. Rob Gronkowski may have been making fun of this age gap during an interview that he did with Barstool Sports before Tom Brady's, I think this was actually before the Tom Brady retirement ceremony at Gillette Stadium last week. Here's Gronk.
Mr. Kraft 100% made the right call by putting Tom in within the first year and doing it on June 12th, obviously. It's a 6 month of the year. He won six Super Bowls here. Tom's number 12 in 2024 is just age girls that Tom and Bill are talking to now, 24-year-olds. So.
Now we have the confirmation on that last
part.
That
makes more sense.
That's very funny.
I saw this tweet going around this weekend, like, just Jordan calls up mom and dad and says, hey, I want you guys to meet my boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then Bill Belichick walks in the house.
Yeah, just imagine your 24-year-old daughter is like, hey, I want you to meet my boyfriend. You open the door, it's Bill Belichick.
And you're like, this is a joke, right?
Here's the thing, though.
Like, is Steve coming?
If you're somebody, she's, I believe, from Maine. If you're somebody from the greater New England area and Bill Belichick is dating your daughter, with the 50-year age gap, there's got to be a part of you thinking, well, she's not going to want anything, and that is my favorite football coach.
This is a season one of House of the Dragon. Everyone's got a little Otto Hightower in them, all right? Everyone's willing to pimp out a little bit.
I would imagine that there would be some mental gymnastics being done by her dad at a setting like that.
Just
a thought.
It's got to be so uncomfortable.
Do you think her dad...
Is her dad older or younger than Bill Belichick, you think?
100% younger.
Yeah. Definitely younger, yes.
Her dad would have to be 50. It would have been 50 when she was born.
Yeah.
Do you think her dad, if they've met, we're already zooming to they've met, do you think he's been like, so why did you bench Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl against the Eagles? Like, if he's that big of a fan, you have to.
You have to get to the bottom of that if he's dating your daughter.
Yeah.
You definitely do.
What'd you know about Aaron Hernandez? I saw a documentary.
That documentary made it seem like you were okay with murder. Former Alabama turned Eagles linebacker Terrell Lewis went viral over the weekend. Why? Well, OnlyFans model Mia Mercy accused him of not paying her. There's a video online showing him running away from a hotel room while Mia Mercy, butt naked, was chasing him. The caption for this...
I didn't know that was the link that I was clicking on.
Not safe for work, Joe. The caption on this video, quote, we've got a runner, ladies and gentlemen. And then she tagged a bunch of famous NFL accounts. Still up by X. Terrell Lewis is currently a linebacker for the Eagles. All of his social media profiles are now private.
I mean, she tagged like the position coaches for his team. That's tough.
Here's what also is tough. The OnlyFans model has accused the NFL player of not paying her the money she was promised after allegedly having consensual sex. Okay, was this in Vegas or something like that? Isn't prostitution illegal? Because isn't this essentially that?
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer here. I don't know where this hotel was.
It looks kind of Vegas-y.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, don't elaborate on that.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't know. Bad look for Terrell Lewis, I'll say that.
She didn't run him down. So
She got close, though. She kept up with him more than you would want.
Barefoot.
Bare-assed. If he was a Texans linebacker, I feel like we'd be like, huh. It's like need him to have a little bit more top-end speed.
It's like when Baker Mayfield got tackled by the cops before his draft, and it's like, can you really, like, can't run the cops?
I'll just say, Christian Harris would have dusted this one. Sideline to sideline? Are you kidding me?
Another football player in trouble, and guess what? He's a Kansas City Chief. And guess what? It's a Kansas City Chief who's already been in trouble this offseason. Chiefs defensive lineman Isaiah Bugs was arrested for the second time in a month. He was booked on a domestic violence and burglary charge in Alabama Sunday morning and released. Tuscaloosa County Sheriff's Office records show Bugs was released on $5,000 bond. No further comments about or details about the arrest were available. The Chiefs were aware, did not comment. May 30th, you might remember Bugs turning himself in after being charged with two misdemeanor counts of second-degree animal cruelty in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Two dogs under his care were found to be neglected and malnourished. One of them had to be euthanized. Bugs' agent, Trey Robinson, has alleged his client is a victim of an ongoing subversive campaign to force the closure of a hookah lounge that he owns in Tuscaloosa.
The whole story is bizarre because why haven't the Chiefs just cut him yet?
Great question, because this is not a very important Chief.
He's a nobody. He's an absolute nobody. He's going into his second year with the team. No one has a clue who this guy is, yet he's been arrested twice and nothing's happened.
Yep.
It's just bizarre.
He's an Alabama guy, and Terrell Lewis, Alabama guy. Not a great day for Nick Saban, little game called Life Tree.
I mean, hey.
Look, leader of men. Nick Saban.
Once they leave Nick Saban, they're no longer Nick Saban.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. Him and Kirby Smart, like, yeah, it's your problem.
This
dude.
Isn't Urban Meyer.
Nick Sirianni, you deal with them.
Yeah,
it's not Urban Meyer. It's not Nick Sirianni, but it's also not D'Amico Ryans. But this happened on D'Amico's watch.
Never,
because D'Amico Ryans, he teaches these guys about, you know what? I just said it again. I'll say it again. A little thing called life. Because ultimately, that's the biggest thing.
Also, they like Sean said. If it was Christian Harris, he would have outrun the
ball. Yeah. Christian Harris doesn't own a hookah bar that's getting shut down.
Boom.
Tobacco? Bad for your lungs. Good for your lungs.
You can't outrun borderline prostitutes if you do that.
All right. That is our countdown to the start of the NFL season. We are 80 days away. Joe George, Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, we got more proof of how outside of Houston, no one knows what they're talking about when it comes to the Houston Texans. You'll hear why next. Stick around.
ESPN. 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776
to jump in, to text, to call the HRNP listener line. You can also join us on Twitter at Gallant Says, at Joe George Radio, at Shawnee Mapes behind the glass, twitch.tv/ESPN975 on YouTube. At ESPN Houston. Do got to remind you guys that we got a very fun event coming up June 27th, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 night at the Sugarland Space Cowboys game. That's June 27th, in case you missed that. Listeners can get tickets for $9.25. All you got to do is enter promo code ESPN925. Again, ESPN925. You can watch the future of the Astros. You can also see if any of us bleep up throwing out the first pitch like old BK did last year.
Sources say we're adding Jeremy to the mix. So it sounds like right now it's you and Jer.
Me and Jer Bear.
Yeah, you and Jer Bear. TBD if any of the olds from the morning show will participate.
Oh!
I mean, they're closer to Bill Belichick's age than they are his girlfriend's age, so...
I actually don't know if that's definitively true because I don't know how old either
they're definitely
John or Lance are.
They're definitely closer to 72 than they are 24.
I truly do not know the answer.
I mean, Paul, we're in our mid-30s. They've been on the radio since we were in diapers.
I was not in diapers when they were on the radio. Joe.
I guess. Well, you're.
I feel like it's more of a when you stop wearing diapers.
So since Sean was in diapers,
well,
before I was born, they probably were. They didn't do the show together, but
gotcha. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're both in their 40s, right?
Sure.
That sounded sarcastic. I mean, I'm pretty sure John's in his 40s.
John's got grandkids.
Yeah. John's a young man.
I mean, if you watch House Dragons last night, grandkids pop out when you're real young.
Oh, they're both in their 40s. What are you talking about? You're being ageist right now.
Ageist?
Yeah, you were ageist against me just a moment ago by saying, oh, we were in diapers when they were on the air. No, I wasn't. And on top of that, I think you're being ageist against them right now. So you're calling them the old guys.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. For all I know, they're younger than Joel. I don't know.
It works out for Bill.
Yeah, but
we're gonna make you a silver fox.
You're trying to change the subject here. You're trying to make it seem like they're in their 70s. They're not.
No, I said they're closer to 72 than 24.
Well, I don't know that that's factual.
I'm like 99.
Are you gonna ask them their age? I mean, you are technically. You're middle management.
I don't know.
You might get in trouble for that though.
That's true.
HRMP
canceled. See you guys last show.
Because he has drunk and not old.
Well, that's what Jake found out the hard way.
Well, I mean.
Pour one out.
I have. I'm not. Pouring one out.
Oh, you're not pulling one out.
Hard pass. Okay. No, I'm asking them. I'm just going to ask a question. I'm not going to go on the offensive.
You said that they're closer to 72 than they are to 24.
You also said it's going to be Jeremy and Paul, and we'll see if one of the olds wants to throw the first pitch. I feel like that part's getting thrown under the rug.
It's all right.
It's not all right.
They're one of the elder statesmen of the station.
Nope, neither of them are 50, based off of my eyes.
Yeah.
I'm not looking at the back of the baseball card.
I mean, the back of the baseball card is what matters.
Yeah, either they started when they're 10 or they're older than 50.
John and Lance are good-looking guys. I'm pretty sure they're in their 40s, and I think what you said right there, I feel like it should
fake
be brought
news.
Up again. Like, it should be brought up.
Fake news.
Also, fake news. I can't believe Pro Football Focus is pushing this. As far as players who have the most approved in 2024. This is the entire NFL.
The entire NFL.
Deshaun Watson. That makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
With the Cleveland Browns. Russell Wilson with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
That makes sense. Daniel Jones with the New York Giants.
Uh-huh.
That makes sense. Bryce Young with the Carolina Panthers. That makes sense. A little less sense, but... makes some sense.
Yeah, I think it makes just because of the pressure that CJ put on him, I would say.
I was moving on to the next guy. I think Bryce Young makes a lot of sense. Bryce Young stunk last year.
No, that's what I mean about Bryce. Like, because
I was moving on to the next guy. I was saying, like, this one makes a little bit less sense. Calvin Ridley makes a little bit less sense. I don't think he was bad last year.
I disagree with you there. I think Calvin, because he hasn't been great in the NFL. Even before the suspension, he had a lot of injuries.
But he had 1,000 yards receiving and 8 touchdowns last year.
I know, but we used to talk about Calvin Ridley like he was like one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
I don't really remember that, but I don't think he's got that much to prove here. I feel like him on this list, bizarre. Jedrick Willis Jr., I'll be honest, I don't know who that is.
Okay, good, me neither.
Jedrick Willis Jr.? What?
Offensive lineman for... either the Bucks or the...
he's on the Browns.
Browns, yeah.
Because
there's a Wills, too.
You couldn't have told me what position he played, honestly.
Watch out, Jedrick. Yeah. All eyes are on you.
So he's on this most approved in 2024 list.
We're going to be having a lot of Jedrick Wills conversations throughout the year.
I guess so.
Week after week. It's like Caitlin Clark.
And then Houston Texans corner Jeffrey Okuda is on this list. So... he's on this list because he's a former top 5 pick, and he is on his third team in 4 years. But I feel like no one's thinking going into this year, is Jeffrey Okuda finally going to look like a top 5 corner? As much as they're probably thinking to themselves, I don't know where Jeffrey Okuda plays. Is he still in the league? That's probably what they're thinking.
Yeah.
I suppose that means he does have a lot to prove. But I think it's weird to put him on the same level as guys like Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, and Daniel Jones, like this Pro Football Focus graphic did.
Yeah, because like those are guys who you know. I guess Daniel Jones technically could lose his job to Drew Lock. I mean, like I know they're kind of some people are kind of pushing that narrative a little bit, and technically Russell Wilson could lose his job to Justin Fields. But Like, Daniel Jones got paid. Russell Wilson has been paid. Deshaun Watson's been paid. Calvin Ridley's been paid. Bryce Young was the first overall pick. You know, Okuda was the top five pick how many years ago now? Well, it's been 4 years?
2020.
He's on his third team. And Jedrick Wills was the 10th pick in that draft. I think it's because they're up that high. Like, they were drafted that high. I guess you can make an argument, but...
C.J. Henderson was picked number 9, also on the Texans, too.
So also, why is he not on the list?
It's weird that they added these two guys in. Honestly, if you're going to do a graphic that says which player has the most to prove in 2024, you should have just left the quarterbacks on. Because that's all that anybody really cares about, ultimately, as far as the national conversation about the sport. You want to talk about the quarterbacks first, instead of some random guys who are top 10 picks that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy was a top 10 pick. Not very good.
Yeah, it really should just be fantasy football positions. Like, you can even talk me into, like, a wide receiver or a running back. Because, like, Joe Mixon, maybe has something to prove.
I would put Kyle Pitts on this list.
Kyle Pitts.
Like, Kyle Pitts, like after, like, what he's gone through in Atlanta, like, it's time for him to, you know, like, show up and be the tight end that everyone thought he was going to be coming out of Florida. Like he makes sense to me on this list. But Okuda's on his third team. Like, Russell Wilson's on his third team because he got paid by the Broncos and it was a disaster. He moved on. Okuda's on his third team because it's been a disaster everywhere. He's not been a good football player. I don't know what you're proving, especially when, like it's OTAs, but who's getting the most run at the cornerback two spot?
That would be Kamari Lassiter, who they drafted in the second round. Yeah. And from what DJ said, it sounds like he's significantly ahead of both C.J. Henderson, another former top 10 pick from 2020, and Jeffrey Okuda, a former top 10 pick from 2020.
Jeff Okuda, prove to me that you won't be playing in the UFL next year.
Yeah, like what are you proving? He's
proving that he won't be on the Birmingham Stallions next year.
I don't know why he's on this list. And I'm not even sure he's the Texan that...
the piece that they need.
Hey, you know what? Maybe it'll work out for them. Tom Brady handing out trophies yesterday.
Yeah, he got booed by all those people in St. Louis. I love that. No, that's good. That was good sports town by St. Louis. Yeah, they don't even have a football team. They're still mad about losing the Super Bowl 36. I love it. Good for them.
I'm commending them. Long memories.
They need a team back. They do.
Dude, they have like 30 to 40,000 people showing up to these XFL games.
They're the only team, they're the only city that cares about this not very good football league.
Yeah.
They're the only city that cares. They deserve a football team.
100%.
How does LA have two? It makes no sense.
And neither of them are the Raiders.
Yeah.
And no one really cares about either of them.
No.
If they're not good.
The Rams have been pretty consistent and won a Super Bowl. And yet, they're not the Lakers. They're not the Dodgers. They're not USC. LA's just not a great NFL town.
Yeah,
some cities, it just doesn't work out in that way. St. Louis, I get it. It's a small market, but at least they care.
And they didn't want them to leave. Like, it was very, like, kind of what happened with the McNairs. Like, it was more about the ownership group didn't want to be there anymore.
He was operating in bad faith, Dan Kroenke, and I think he had to settle with the city of St. Louis for a significant portion of money because he clearly was operating in bad faith, as was the NFL. And I get it. Okay, you want to go. I would want to leave St. Louis for Los Angeles, too.
Same.
If I were a billionaire and had a company. I would love to move it, even with all the taxes I might have to pay. At the same time, there were so many signs. There was so much writing on the wall that this was not going to turn into this amazing story about L.A. falling in love with the NFL again. St. Louis deserves a team.
I think they'll get one. Probably an expansion, I would imagine.
I don't know how that's going to work, though. I feel like you're at a point right now with 34 teams, a 33rd team. Mathematically, the NFL, outside of the 17-game schedule, works out so well having 32 teams, four teams in every single division. And that fit that they had for a couple of years when they brought the Browns back with 31 teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it only lasted a couple of years. You could tell that they were perhaps, you know, feeling a little bit OCD, taking a look at how one division had six teams in it.
I think they'll move quickly. I do think the expansion, like when it happens, it's going to be rapid, where you might see four teams added within like a three-year period, where it's pretty a seismic shift. Would you even have, like, for you, Okuda as the number one Texan with the most approved this year?
No, we can answer that on the other side. What is the Houston Texan with the most approved this season? And on top of that, are you concerned at all about the latest Astros injury setback? Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.